Okay, good evening. We are now looking at Parshat Ki Tisa. That's the coming Sedra. And one of the things that there is in this Sedra is the incense. And the passage about the incense, which is here, we actually say in the liturgy twice a day or more. In one way or the other, it is part of the morning service in the Hasidic Nusach. It's said twice in the morning service and also in the afternoon service. So Vayomer Hashem, you see that verse 34? Vayomer Hashem el Moshe, God said to Moshe, Kach lecha samim, take spices. Nataf, ushchelet, v'chelbana, different kinds of spices. Chelbana is galbanum, which is an interesting spice, which has got a non-pleasant smell, and there's a whole interesting concept there, that the spices represent the Jewish people together, and the galbanum, the chelbana, are the rashaim, the wicked people whom we were just discussing. And they also have to, they're part of the bundle. Samim ulevon lazaka, that's frankincense, pure frankincense, bad bad year, and you measure it all out in equal portions. Va'asita alta kotoret, and you make it into incense. Rokach maser okeach, the work of an apothecary, of a grinder who grinds up a chemist. Mumulach tahor kodesh, well blended, pure, holy. V'shachakta mimena hadek, and you should beat it, grind it very well. V'natata mimena lifnei ha'edut bo'ol mo'ed, and you should put it, some of it, before the testimony in the tent of meeting in the sanctuary. Asher yiva'ed lecha shama, where I will meet with you. Kodesh Kadashim Tiyeh Lachem, it should be holy of holies for you. And then it tells us that we mustn't make anything like that. We mustn't imitate this kind of incense. And the translator here has put some nice pictures of spikenard and frankincense and strombus and onyka in order for us to get the flavor of this wonderful incense that was used in the temple. And the incense is going to be the main theme in the rather short discourse that we have here, that was said in 1968 on the 16th of Adar, which happens to be today. Then it was the Shabbat, which came straight after Purim. And so we'll begin with the Maimah melody as usual. Oh yam bam ba yam ba yom bam bo yam ba dam ba da yom bam bo yam ba yam ba ya dam bam bo do. Ay 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 yom, oh ay 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 dam ba yam bam ba ay ay dam ba yam ba yam, ay ay dam ba yar dam ba yo, bam bam ba yam ba yam bam bam, bam ba yam ba yam bam bam, oh yam bam 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 bam, kitisa. You should lift up. Most of the discourses on this Sedra are actually part of Shabbat Parshat Shkalim, which we had 2 weeks ago. And and so it's quite unusual, a discourse which is on some other aspect, because this Sedra begins with the theme of the half a shekel. However, the theme of this discourse is the Ketoret, the incense. Hinei b'parsha zu mavua inyan ha'avodah b'mishkan ha'vamikdash. the in this parsha, in this sedra, is explained the idea of the service in the sanctuary and in the temple, the Ikri Mishkan. The temple is also called the sanctuary. And Inyan Ma'aseh HaKtoret, the idea of the making of the incense, the making and the use of the incense. Shezeh Haya Ma'avodot HaIkriyot BaMishkan. This was one of the main kinds of service in the sanctuary. Va'af al-pi shegam b'parsha akodemet, parsha tetzaveh, and even though in the previous sedra, parsha tetzaveh, mudubah b'inyan haktoret, it talks about the incense, v'chein b'parsha haba, parsha v'yakel, and also in next week's sedra, it also talks about the incense, aval sham mudubah rak b'klalut, but there it just speaks about it in general, u'b'parsha zu, but in our sedra, mavua ha'inyan b'pratot. It tells in detail the Hainu Achanot Bazer, the preparations for it, or Mimasha Hayak Torat Nasit, and what were the ingredients of the incense, V'chein Godel Ha'inyan Shebazer, and it expresses how important this is, V'halavim Akshurim Bazer, the negative commands not to imitate the incense, V'chome Inyan Shebehem, how serious they are, until even the idea of the opposite of life, of the punishment of someone who transgresses this and makes the incense for themselves to smell outside the temple. This idea of the opposite of life, mavua dafka b'pashazu, is explained in this sedra. Because here in this sedra it speaks about how important the incense is. Even though with other offerings there are many negative commands, like bringing an animal which isn't an offering into the temple courtyard, or slaughtering the animal outside the courtyard, it's not the same as the incense, shechuma chamura kol kach, which is so serious, ad linyan shel hepech hachaim la'oseh b'matkunta, until it even speaks about the opposite of life for the person who makes it, imitating exactly the same ingredients and the same amounts as in the temple. Now, so the question is, what is the significance of the incense? Vihine, and it's very interesting, first of all, a little bit of background on the incense. When the people of Korach rebelled against Moses, Moses told them to take pans of incense. And then the earth swallowed up and they all died. So people spoke about the incense as having this negative quality. And then shortly following that, there was a plague among the people, and Moshe told Aaron to go with a pan of incense. And he stood between the living and the dead, and people saw that the incense had the power of life. So the incense actually has there's something very special about the incense. Here it's been speaking about the way one must be careful not to use it outside the temple, but it also had a tremendously powerful spiritual quality. And in fact, there was it was considered a very great thing for the priest to have the opportunity to offer the incense in the temple. And so they would organize it in such a way that each priest only did it once, unless everyone else had already done it. But they would make sure that every priest, every one of the Kohanim, got a turn at offering the incense in the temple. It was offered twice a day. And so it was a very special thing to be able to do that.
Has anybody made it up recently,
young fellow Smith? Well, you can't do that.
That's
what it's saying, that you can't make it up to the same.
But there was incense found.
Wasn't there?
Yes.
There was a search paper.
Oh yeah.
I told them anything about it. register a paper on it, and they found what they considered to be the incense, and the Rabbonim would only let them burn it with chemicals but not with fire. And they said they found that it had a lot of the properties that you know, that describe the temple service, and people sort of think, well, you know, the details. And apparently that, like, the area where they burnt it, that there were no insects, there were no flies, and the smell, it was very pungent and sort of permeated all their clothes and everything for a very large area. Really? You know, a lot of the things which they're saying...
It was insect repellent as well.
Sorry?
Insect repellent.
Because you're thinking, if all the meat that was offered up, so you think, well, you know, the smell...
It's
a real base of shechita, basically. Yes. What are you going to do with the smell? Not everybody likes the smell, even if it is the service of a chef. And apparently, the incense covered it. Like, you're talking about the nasty smell. Well, apparently,
I think Maimonides speaks about this. The Rambam speaks about this in Guide for the Perplexed.
Yeah.
I think so. You know, he says something about that, you know, in terms of the incense.
But therefore, you'd think that nowadays somebody would take it and patent it as... or makes up something as an insect repellent and as a smell.
I think they found these jugs in near Eil Dovid. Something like that. There was I can't remember where I read the article. Do you remember? I told you about it.
Maybe tell me. Israel Archaeological Society would have published.
It wasn't in that. It was in a mixture book on I don't even remember what the subject was, but I was really sort of thrilled when I read it. So I must have told David. I thought I told you too. No, just the fact that the incense, because for me, that part of the prayers is so difficult, you know, this reading through the... So, you know, and then suddenly you got it, and they say they found it, and
the reciting of it as part of the liturgy is seen as something like a spiritual thing. So it's said in the morning, and a second time in the Hasidic and Sephardi custom, I think in the general Sephardi custom as well, and in the afternoon before the mincha prayer, it's also said.
We don't even know what the spices are when we've got the names in English.
Right, well, I mean, what one could certainly do is buy some of these spices, not to make it up in the same, proportions, but just to smell what these individual spices are. Aria Kaplan has kindly provided some names and pictures. I mean, I'm sure there are, you know, different views.
And I know where some of the plants are, halfway in the Dead Sea, not far from Qumran. And
right. Look, he gives the whole list here. Balsam, onycha, galbanum, frankincense, myrrh, cassia, spikenard, saffron, costus, cinnamon, and cinnamon bark.
Ah, really?
Near where there's a temple, remnants of a
there's big amounts there.
Mm.
If you start adding up the weight, it's a lot.
350 pounds. Well,
shekels.
No, he's giving pounds. Oh.
Yeah. It's like a ton. Worth
yeah.
Of
well, that would well, it would last it, for a whole year.
A year with enough for every
because
day.
Then they would then divide it into 365 parts, one for each day of the year.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
They had a whole special area in the temple for it. Incense burners.
Vihine, second paragraph. Vihine inyan hakorbanot umasak torah haktoret. Now, the offerings in the sanctuary and the making of the incense, harezeh avodat ha-mishkan, that's the service of the sanctuary, or kumoshnit by b'mayma de yom ha-elula, as it explains in the mayma of Yud Shvat, the batilegani mayma, she'ik avodah b'mishkan mikdash u'inyan avodat ha-korbanot, that the main service in the temple is the service of the offerings, shekolel gam ma'asak toret, which includes the incense, v'lechein haya mishkan me'atzei shittim dafka. And that's why the sanctuary was made of cedar wood, k'mavu asham, as it explains that. V'al yedei kol zeh na'aseh habo shechanti b'tocham, and through that comes the idea that God is dwelling in the sanctuary, among us, within us. Dehine klalut inyan ha'korbanot, Because the general idea of korban, you see, korban in English means, is translated offering or sacrifice. But the word really comes from the word karov, to be close. Hu inyan kiruv kol hakochot. It's bringing all the energy and the different qualities of the person together and close to God. Va'ad la'akiruv asher raza dekubna ola ad raza de'in saf. Coming close to God in such a way that, as the Zohar says, the secret of the offering rises to the secret of the Ein Sof, of the infinite. So by bringing the offering below, something is happening, something is rising above to the infinite. So whatever offering it is, that's the nature of the offering. The offering is somehow a point of connection with the divine, with the infinite. But there's a difference between ordinary offerings and the incense. The haktoret, the korbanot nikra'e mechila. When it speaks about the ordinary offerings, it calls them eating. K'mosha katuv et korbani lachmi le'ishai. My offering, my bread for my fires. It's a kind of anthropomorphic way of describing it. But it's as if the korban is food, so to speak. V'lechein nikraem Yisrael rayati. What does it mean, rayati? The Jewish people are called rayati. This is a quote from the Song of Songs. Rayati means my friends, but also there's another way of explaining the word rayati. The perish rayati panasati. That's Rayati, my friend who gives me sustenance, Bishnei Tamidin, in the two daily offerings, Kedi'ita B'Midrash, as it says in the Midrash, Yisrael Mefanesin Lavim Shebashemayim, that so to speak, the Jewish people give sustenance to their Father in heaven through the service of the Korbanot, of the offerings in the temple. Mashe'enke Maseh Aktoret, whereas the incense is not like food. No, it is something else. Uinyan hareach. It's scent, smell. Va'afal pishim itzadinin itkalalut shebekedusha. And even though, in terms of in the realm of holiness, everything is connected together. Hinegam b'korbanot yeshlo inyan hareach. So that also with the offerings, there's the concept of the scent. K'mo shekatuv reach nichoach l'Hashem, a pleasing, savory scent for God. Ach bi'ikach. Hakorbanot minyan achila, the offerings of food, and va'al kein heichen mechalkim benukva de paradashka yaminit le paradashka smolit gabik toret dafka. Where is there the distinction made between the right and the left nostril? It's with the incense. Kivun shadafka biktoret, since with the incense in eikein yana hu areach, with the incense the main thing is the scent. So therefore, it's within the power of the incense, lafoch haleumat zeh, to transform something negative into something positive. Now that's what the incense is able to do, because the incense has got something unique, which we don't have almost anywhere else in Jewish thought. Using something not kosher in order to serve God.
You see, why is incense not kosher?
Because there is something in it. There's an ingredient which is the offerings have to be something permitted for us to eat. You can't. There are no offerings which are non-kosher animals. They have to be kosher animals. Whereas in the incense, yeshno gam inyan hamor. Now there is something called mor in the incense. Now mor, I once went through a whole thing studying this mor. You see, there's myrrh, and there's myrrh, and there's mor, and there's a whole discussion what exactly the mor is. But one way of understanding what the mor is, that it's blood from a non-kosher animal, even if it was from a kosher animal.
So that could be that muric smell or something.
I think it's...
The Murex smell, because they've got the purple dye for the...
For the tiplets. Yes. Yeah, but I don't think that's what the Moor is. The Moor... He's translated... You see, there's two different things.
It doesn't show it in the pictures. Or the list here. It's only got Moor. £85
£85 times
360. That's quite a lot. Yeah, it isn't. Okay. Yeah. So, but this—that's the tradition, particularly in these Hasidic texts. It goes back a long way, and the point being that in the incense, there's the power to take something impure and transform it into something pure. And that's the. And in fact, because there are 11 ingredients in the incense, now 10 is the number which is seen as like a sacred number, and 11 is non-sacred. And the power of taking the non-sacred, or even the impure, there are 10 sfirot, 10 divine sfirot, and 11, so to speak, sfirot in the realm of klipa, in the realm of impurity. So it's 10 versus 11. 10 is a sacred number, 11 is a non-sacred number. And the idea is of taking that which is 11 and transforming it into something sacred. So the 11 ingredients of the Ketoret and the at least one ingredient which itself is actually non-kosher, and that becoming something holy. And that's really what the whole purpose of life is about: taking the unholy and making it holy. So really, that's where we come in. That's where we come into the picture. Because there we've got this. You see, so long as everything is holy, so that's beautiful. But a large part of the person, or a certain part of the person, is left out of the picture. So the focus is to locate the point of non-holiness and to home in on that and to help that reveal its potential to be holy. That's why when it comes to the giving of the Ten Commandments, they begin with the word Anochi, I am the Lord your God. And the Midrash says, Anochi Lushon Mitzri. The word Anochi is an Egyptian word for I. But it's I in Egyptian. It's not the normal Hebrew word. The normal Hebrew word is Ani. So what is Anochi? The Egyptian word for I. Why do the Ten Commandments, the focus of the whole Torah, begin with an Egyptian word? Because it's trying to reach the Egyptian inside us. So in the same way here, we've got the incense, and the incense has this connotation. The incense is very sacred, but it's got this connotation of it's got something impure, something not kosher. It's got the number 11 associated with it. It's taking the negative and making it into something positive.
How are we going to reach the Egyptians around us?
Well, you see, that's an interesting point of transformation of our consciousness. You know, do we see the problem as the Egyptians around us or the Egyptians inside us?
Yes.
Well, the Egyptian inside us, it's within our hands to do something about in a more direct way. And if we are able to focus on getting rid of transforming the Egyptian inside us, then the sort of optimistic religious philosophy
may not be time.
Presents, then maybe we'll have the right stance in a more positive and unified way what to do with the Egyptians around us. Because it's our own... divided self, which is really the key to many of the problems, as many people say. So there we have the idea of the mur or mor, which is the represents the realm of impurity. Yukumoy shemavaya admor azokin, as the Alter Rebbe explains, page Lamed Aleph. Vinyan shisha chodoshim b'shemen hamor. Now, Rabbi Shneur Zalman explains this in his discourses about Purim, where it says that Esther, or all these young ladies who were coming to see Ahasuerus, they would be bathed for 6 months in this oil of myrrh. And then there's Mordechai, Merodachio. The word Mordechai itself is interpreted also as a kind of myrrh. So Mordechai, you see, makes the word Merodachio, pure myrrh. Not only is the myrrh something from the realm of negativity and impure, each one of the ingredients of the incense is connected with the realm of impurity. Why? Because there are 11 ingredients in the incense. Each one of these 11 is one of 11. The number 11 represents the realm of impurity. It's not 10. 10 is the realm of holiness. Because when we're speaking about holiness, it says about the 10 Svirot in Sefer Yetzirah. 10 and not 11. So that's also these 11 ingredients of these spices, they correspond to the 11 kings of Esau, the 11 leaders of Esau's descendants. So that means each one of the ingredients of the incense corresponds to one of the kings of Esau. So therefore, each of the ingredients of the incense corresponds to something in the realm of impurity. Because the theme of the incense is to transform the impure, the negative, the profane, into holiness. The power for this is because the incense is because incense is scent, and that power of scent, which reaches higher than the offerings. So now we come to the idea of the scent, of this the sense of smell. Now the special quality of scent, being able to smell something, is that there are certain things that one smell who shemagia be'etzem ha'nefesh, it reaches the essence of the soul. Va'al kein, and therefore b'koach ha'reach, it's in the power of scent, v'davka reach chazak, a strong scent, lo'orem ha'shena, to awaken a person from sleep, like smelling salts, right? Which awaken a person who's fainted. That's the power of scent. Eating doesn't have the same effect. On the contrary, eating often causes people to fall asleep, whereas the scent of the right kind of scent will wake a person up. Therefore it says in the tractate of Talmud, which talks about Yom Kippur, the high priest had to be up the entire night before Yom Kippur, part of his preparation to be a pure person before Yom Kippur, that sacred day. He had to be up all night so he wouldn't eat much on the eve of Yom Kippur, so that he shouldn't fall asleep, because food brings sleep. Whereas scent arouses a person from sleep. because the scent reaches, and the right kind of scent, reaches the essence of the soul. And that's why the service of the high priest on Yom Kippur once a year. Haitabik Torah Davka was with incense. That's what he's doing. The main feature of the service on Yom Kippur is the high priest going into the Holy of Holies with a pan of incense. Shuin Yen Areach, which is the quality of scent, the Kamor Ba'adam Lamata, just as with a person below. Hine Areach, Bekocho Lo'oret Etzem HaNefesh. The scent has the power to arouse the essence of the soul. Kamokeinu B'mikdosh, Avodah B'Reach, U'B'Kodosh HaKadoshim. Similarly, in the temple, the service with scent, with the incense, is in the Holy of Holies. That means in the very essence. You see, we're talking about this concept of different domains. And so you have in the temple, you have the outer courtyard, and then so-called the Ezrat Nashim, and then you come through into the more inner courtyard, and then you have the Heichal, which is there's different levels, and then finally there you have, right in the innermost place, you have the Holy of Holies. So it's in this place, the Holy of Holies, that's where the Avodah, the service of the incense, took place. There, that the high priest would come into the Holy of Holies with a pan of incense on Yom Kippur, and there would be the fragrant smoke of the incense. So just as...
Is anywhere written how many of them?
Hmm?
I'm sorry, it's an irrelevant thought.
Go on.
How many of them actually passed out and had to be pulled out on their piece of strip or whatever? Recorded.
There is somewhere a number given of how many high priests
actually
there were.
Seeing that they were up all night and starving the day before as well.
Well, there's another problem. That people would buy the position of Kohen Gadol. Because it was like partly a political appointment to do with the Roman government. And they would buy the position. And that meant they were not really spiritually fit. They were not really spiritually fit for that very, very exalted step into the Holy of Holies. So they might well die just because of not being great enough as a person. And so that
get inside.
Right. So the Talmud says they would have a chain round their foot so that in case they did die they could be dragged out.
As well. But that would have contaminated everything in there. And then who would do the red heifer ceremony to give the purification?
All right.
If they were dead.
Well, so I think once they're dragged out, they're dragged out. But there was a very interesting this I was taught as a child, and in the whole traditional educational system, you know, this is a terrible thing, these high priests buying their position, dying, having to be pulled out, what a terrible, disgusting thing. And there's a very interesting sikha by the Rebbe, who looks at them in a positive way. He says, look at that. They knew they were going to die. But they wanted that closeness.
What a place to die.
That's right. They wanted that closeness with God. They were ready to take the risk because they wanted that sense of closeness with God.
You know, in the Tibetan Book of the Dead, it's written that the very highest of their spiritual leaders, at their moment of death, actually all change colour and go up and disappear in radiance, and there's no trace left of the body. It's described.
Well, the
very
high priest
peculiar.
Okay, well, the high priest didn't disappear.
Although Elijah did. The incense going up.
Elijah did.
Wasn't
this
somebody else also?
What?
Wasn't this one of our forefathers just went up, supposedly, no?
There's Hanoch.
Hanoch?
Hanoch, Enoch.
Really?
Enoch was taken away by God. And Elijah, you see, there came Elijah is walking along with Elisha, and there came a chariot of fire with horses of fire, and it divided between the two of them. And Elijah was swept up into the air.
Most probably.
And his cloak fell down on the ground.
Lightning and a tornado, probably.
Well, the only thing is Elijah comes every time there's a Brit. Every time there's a Brit Mila, Elijah comes and is there. We make a chair for him. That's because he was critical of the Jewish people. And he said that they have overturned the covenant. And so therefore God says he should be present at every time that we keep the covenant by making Brit Mila. So he should be there to see how we are keeping the covenant. Uh-huh. It shouldn't be so negative. It's a beautiful passage in the Book of Kings, how he is so upset with the way the Jewish people have behaved that he goes into the desert, and basically he goes to Mount Sinai to give up his prophetship because he's so upset at the way the Jewish people behaved. And then there was a whole vision or manifestation shown to him. Thunder and earthquake and fire, and in all of that, and storm wind, all of that is not God. And then came a still, small voice called Mama Daka. That was God. That was the expression. And so one of the commentaries says God was telling him how to communicate with people gently. How to look at everything in a gentle way. So. Right. So there we have this service of bringing the incense on Yom Kippur in the Holy of Holies. Umitzad ma'alat. The word ma'alat is at the beginning of a line. 8 lines down in this paragraph. Umitzad ma'alat inyan haktoret, and because of the great significance of the incense, al kein b'chol adam lo yeh ba'ol moed, no one was in the tent of meeting at that time on Yom Kippur, including even Malachim. It was a tremendous moment of stillness and aloneness, of solitude, of the high priest with the incense in the Holy of Holies. V'gam b'chol ha'shana, and also throughout the year, shu'inyan areya shemagia be'etzem ha'nefesh. It's the idea of the scent which reaches the essence of the soul, because every day of the year the incense is offered. V'hine k'mot shebegashmiut, as it is physically b'kol ha'reach dafka lo'orem ha'shena, that the power of incense is that or the power of scent can arouse a person from sleep. So it is spiritually, in order to wake someone up from sleep, it's through the scent that spiritually you arouse someone. Now, the idea of sleep was explained in a Purim discourse, which spoke about the whole idea. Be'inyon mashekatuv ani yeshena v'libi er. It says in Song of Songs, I am asleep but my heart is awake. Kol dodi dofek, the voice of my beloved is hitting, is knocking, is insisting. So it's as if Knesset Yisrael, the Jewish people, are asleep within a room, and their lover, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Holy One, bless me, he is outside the room at the door and like knocking on the door. The voice of my beloved. V'hainu sh'agam de Knesset Yisrael b'yishena b'galuta. Even though the Jewish people are sleeping in exile, the sleep of exile. But despite the fact that they're, and the sleep of exile is one where people do wrong things because they're asleep. Ach me'achar shelibi er, but since my heart is awake, da'hainu dov, da'hainu sh'ayechida shebenefesh, the inner point of the soul, he b'shleimut, It's whole, the air, it's still there within, and it's awake within each individual. Al kain, therefore, kol dodi dofek, therefore the voice of my beloved is knocking, and it's saying, pitchili, open up for me. B'chdei shiyeh achoti rayati yonati tamati, so that it should be my sister, my beloved, my dove, my pure one. As it is, that whole stream of beautiful words in the Song of Songs, and you actually have the last page here, is this passage from Song of Songs, which is a very beautiful passage. So that's from chapter 5 of Song of Songs. So that's what it's going through here. How does Knesset Yisrael, how do the Jewish people answer? Pashatati et katonti, I've taken off my clothes. Eichachal bashena, how can I put them on again? Maybe Admor Maharash v'Admor Tzemach Tzedek v'Rishim Yotav l'Shiyah Shirim, and there are discourses by previous and notes, commentaries by previous Lubavitch Rebbeim on this. The B'Midrash Rav l'Shiyah Shirim, in the Midrash on Song of Songs, on this verse, Pashatati et Katonti, where it says, I've taken off my garment, it says, L'koy al bigdei kohuna. When it says, I've taken off my garment, it means the priestly garments, because we're in exile. And the priestly garments have been stripped from us. Or bigdei malchut, and the garments of kingship, because there is no longer a king and no longer a high priest. Shepashtu mimenu begalut, these have been stripped from us in exile. So we are naked of these beautiful clothing. So how can we get up from bed? We're not garbed in the right clothes. At first sight, you would think that the Midrash is strange. Why is it saying, why does it mention the clothes of the kohuna? Umavarim, and it explains the ma'achashani yeshini begalut, begaluta. Since I'm asleep in exile, the cold odi dofek lo'orem ha'ashena, and the voice of my beloved is knocking in order to arouse us from exile. Alkei na'tshuva alzeh. So the answer is he, the pashatati et katonti. I've been stripped of my garments, shechaserim la bigdei kahuna. I do not have the clothes of the priesthood. And therefore there can't be the service of the offerings, which are called a pleasing savor to God. And especially we haven't got the work of the incense, the scent. And the scent would arouse us from sleep. But we haven't got it. Since I haven't got the clothes, I've been stripped of the clothes of priesthood. Ve'ein reach ha-korbanot v'aktoret, and there isn't the scent, the odor of the korbanot and the incense. Im kein eichacha al bashena, how can I put on any clothes? Le'toreh, to be aroused, to wake up, bifrinat achoti rayati, to be my sister, my friend, my bride. Val zem shiva ruach ha-kodesh. And then this is answered, because Song of Songs, it's like two voices back and forth. Val zem shiva ruach hakodesh, and the Holy Spirit answers back, b'shem HaKadosh Baruch Hu, God said, rachatzti et raglai echacha tanfeim. Now that's interesting, you see, because one way of reading the Song of Songs is that it's the same voice, the same one, the girl says, the woman says, I've taken off my clothing, how can I put them on? I've washed my feet, how can I get them dirty? I've washed my feet to go to bed, how can I step on the dusty floor? But here it's putting that voice, it's the second voice, it's God's voice. I've washed my feet, how can I make them dirty? Dehine beta mikdash, because the temple, nikra hadom raglav shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The temple is called the footstool of God. And in the temple was the indwelling of the divine presence, the Shechina. Kamosh katuv inei hashemayim ushmei hashemayim lo yichal kolucha afki abayit hazeh. So when the temple was built, King Solomon said, the heavens and the heavens of the heavens cannot contain you. how can this temple contain you? Shazui Tmiya Kayemet. It's a rhetorical question. So in other words, the temple does contain God in some sense. But since I've washed my feet, and he puts it in Yiddish, אז יחוב זיך אופגבש מליות מתלבש בבית המקדש. I've washed off the whole idea of being enclosed in the temple. It's exile. The temple is destroyed. אם כנכך תנפיים, how can I let my feet down now because I've departed from the world, from the temple itself. So there is this gap. So there's the gap as regards the destroyed temple and the exile and the lack of the priesthood from the point of view of the Jewish people and from the point of view of God, the lack of the indwelling of the divine presence in the temple. There is this gap. Va'afapi, however, even though shegam bezman hagalut, even in the time of exile, יש לו עניין הקורבנות. We do have the offerings. Why? The תפילות כנגד קורבנות תקנו. Because our prayer services every day correspond to the offerings. כמו כן יש לו גם עניין הקטורת עכשיו. We also have the incense now. שזהו עניין תפילת המנחה. And it's interesting, he doesn't say that it's the reading of the paragraph of the incense. He says it's the afternoon prayer. שנקראת מנחת קטורת, which is called an offering of incense. או כמובו הבדרשום והדרושים, as explained in Hasidic discourses, המבארים מעלת תפילת מנחה על שאר תפילות. Explaining the importance of the afternoon prayer compared with other תפילות, because the afternoon prayer, it's in the middle of work. The evening prayer is in the night, when everything's finished. The morning prayer is the beginning of the day. But the afternoon prayer is right in the middle of all activity. Nonetheless, for a few minutes one stops and says the afternoon prayer. So there is something where in the middle of a very sort of ordinary and profane world, one suddenly there's this step of holiness. So that's the incense dimension, taking the profane and making it holy. And then there's another passage which says that Elijah lo ne'na ele betfilat ha-mincha, Elijah at Mount Carmel, the contest with the priests of Baal, that was at the time of the mincha prayer. Kamo shekatuv, as it says. Now, acham shachash al yedei ha-tfila, but the flow which is caused by prayer, hi rak bepnimiyut ha-olamot, is only in the inner dimension of the world. וידוע שההמשכה צריכה להיות גם בחיצוניות העולמות. One has to get the flow also in the externality of the world. Now this is a very interesting conflict that the Rebbe is touching on. That you could read Hasidic thought and many aspects of Judaism as a kind of inner spiritual journey, without any real consideration for what is happening outside. And in fact, as you said before, I was speaking about the inner Egyptian, and you said, what about the outer Egyptian? And it's here that the Rebbe is saying, we've got to deal also with the outer Egyptian and the outer suffering that there is in the world. And in other words, there has to be a reality, an external reality. It's not enough, just the inner spiritual reality. There's a certain kind of elitism in Jewish spiritual history, where a person is happy that he or she, they're in this very high, elevated spiritual mode, and it doesn't matter what happens elsewhere in the world. And the whole mood of Chabad is to care, and to care in the reality of it. In fact, with Rabbi Shlomo Zalman, the founder of Chabad, in 1804 there was passed a terrible statute concerning the Jews in Russia, which made many, many Jews have to leave the places where they'd lived in the villages. They got the idea that the Jews were ruining the peasants, because the Jews were running the liquor inns. They had the liquor license to sell vodka from the inns, and the peasants were getting drunk all the time. So of course it's the Jews' fault. So the Jews have to be driven out of the villages into the cities, where there was no place for them and no one to look after them. And there was tremendous suffering. And Rabbi Shneur Zalman began traveling around different places trying to raise money to look after these displaced Jews, these Jewish refugees within Russia. And he came to Reb Boruch, the grandson of the Baal Shem Tov. And he said, and Reb Boruch said, "What are you doing in my territory?" Like the Hasidic rebbes at that time had a kind of territory. This was Reb Boruch's territory, and that's Reb Shneur Zalman's. So Reb Shneur Zalman said, "I'm collecting money for the poor Jews who've got nowhere to live, and it's winter, and they've got no heating." And Reb Boruch said, "Oh, you're a tzaddik. All you have to do is put your hand over your forehead, and you're immediately everything is all right. In other words, you can retreat into this world of contemplation and mysticism." And Rabbi Shneur Zalman didn't accept that. He said, "No, I can't bear the pain of these people, and it's not enough for me to be in a spiritual mood. What about looking after them?" And that was a conflict of the way in which one should be looking at the world. And that really was the path of the Rebbe, was looking at the world in real terms. So there has to be that the flow. It's not enough just in the inwardness, like when praying, that we have the quality of the offerings, but it has to be in an external way as well. As Rabbi Shneur Zalman says in Tanya, "V'chein b'mitzvot." Similarly with mitzvot, you might have just like spiritual mitzvot, but tzarich liot ma'aseh ha-mitzvot dafka. There has to be the actual doing of the mitzvot. Va'ad sheklalut inyan ha-Torah mitzvot, till the whole idea of Torah mitzvot hu dafka lamata b'olam hazeh. It's in this world below. Because when we got the Torah, the proof that we Jewish people should get the Torah rather than leaving it in the world of the angels is the phrase, "Delamitzchayim yaradetem," as it says in the Talmud, in Tractate Shabbat. You went down to Egypt. Did you go down to Egypt? Moses is arguing with the angels. The angels are saying we should have the Torah. The Torah is too holy to give to anyone in the world, any human being. And Moses says to the angels, he says, "Did you go down to Egypt? Are you physical? Did you become slaves in Egypt?" No, the Torah is given to us who were slaves in Egypt. In other words, real people. "Uvakorbanot omnam kein," and so with the korbanot, with the offerings, "ushal yadamu gilui amshecha gam b'chitzoniyut ha'olamot." That's the thing about actually having the temple in Jerusalem and having the real service of the offerings, is that causes a transformation and a spiritual flow in the externality of the world. Whereas when it's just the prayers which are in the place of the offerings, the flow is only in the inner dimension of the world. Now, since through the mitzvot hamshacha hi bechitzoniyut ha'olamot, the flow is in the externality, so that's what the Jewish people answer, "Pashatati et katonti," "I've taken off my garment," and they're unhappy about that. Because you could say, you've taken off your garment, all right, you haven't got the temple. So what? You've got the prayers, you've got beautiful prayers, beautiful traditions, beautiful memories. No, it's not enough. We want the real thing. That's what is the claim of the Shulamit in Song of Songs.
There's a bitui in modern Hebrew, katonti lavin. Is it from this?
Katonti, no, that's, katonti is...
I'm too small to understand.
That's from Jacob. Jacob says that in Genesis. He says, in the book of Genesis, he says, katonti, I am too small for all the kindness that you have. So that word, katonti. Here, kotonet is spelt in a different way, with a kaf, right? And then he goes on in the verse in Song of Songs, "Dodi shalach yado min achor." My beloved puts his hand through the hole in the door. There's a door, like the woman is inside, the man is outside, and there's like a hole in the door, some kind of handle or lock. And he puts his hand through this hole in order to open the latch, like to open the latch of the door. Even though the Holy Spirit answers in the name of God, how I have washed my feet. In other words, there is no temple. I'm out of the temple. From the idea that my beloved puts his hand through the hole in the door, what does it mean, my beloved? It means the essential love shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, of the Holy One, l'neshamot Yisrael, to the souls of the Jewish people, whatever position they might be in, however negative, nonetheless there's this tremendous love. U'mitzad ha'ava atzmit, because of this tremendous love, hinei shalach yado min ha'chor, he puts his hand through the hole in the door. Now this chor is now being translated in a different way. Chor u'gam lashon chur karpas. Chur is here taken in terms of what it says in the Megillah of these like splendid decorations that there were in the banquet of Achashverosh. V'chem eloshon cherut. So in other words, it means something luxurious. And also it means freedom. V'al yedei zeh naaseh ha-pitchi li. And through that comes the open up to me. So in other words, there is something good being given by the Holy One, by the lover, to the woman inside, who has been bereft of her temple, to the Jewish people, but he is giving something good. So the putting of his hand through the wall, through the door, is now being explained as giving something good, giving freedom. And through this is hapitchili, open up for me. Ulaacha hapitchili hadal dargot daachoti rayati yonati tamati. After saying open up for me, come the four different levels, each of them meaning my sister, my beloved, my friend, my dove, my pure one. She'ela hin dalad madregot bein b'avodah b'inyan ha'ava. These are four levels. Whether we're talking about service in a way of love, last page. The late Pulchana Kapulchana de Lachimuta, as it says in the Zohar, there is no service like the service of love, or Bein Ba'avodah de Kiyom HaMitzvot, or the service in keeping mitzvot, the Dalet Madregot Hein, Eilu Hein, the Kaneged Dalet Otiyot Hashem Hashem. These four levels of calling the Jewish people by those four terms of love, they are like four levels in service of God, and they correspond to the four letters of the name of God. And it's through that, switching back into the Megillah, that it's just after Purim, La'yehudim aita, for the Jewish people there were, ora v'simcha v'sason v'yikar, light and joy and rejoicing and glory, Asher b'derech evshe yesh lomar, which possibly one could say, says the Rebbe, shadalad inyanim, that these four concepts, ora, simcha, radiance, and joy, hem keneged adalad otziot v'shem avaya, they correspond to the four letters of the name of God. The ora zu Torah, because radiance means Torah, as it says, ne'er mitzvah b'torah or, a lamp, the mitzvah is a lamp and Torah is light. So when it says light, it means Torah. And what is Torah? That's Sfirat HaChokhmah. That's the Sfirah HaChokhmah. So we have there the concept of Chokhmah, of wisdom. So we have wisdom, which is Torah, which is light. And then we have Simcha. Hu inyan mo'adim le'simcha. Simcha means festivals. Shuinyan Sfirat Abina, which is understanding. And so that is the hay. That's the hay of God's name. And then we have Sason, which means Brit Milah. Shazer Inyan Sfirat HaYesod, which is the sixth Sfirah Yesod, foundation. Shuikar Hazer Ampin, which is the main aspect of the six Sfirot, which there are in the Chesed Gvura Tiferet, kindness, severity and mercy, victory, submission and dedication. So dedication is this sixth svira, corresponding to Brit Milah. V'yekor elu tefillin, and finally we have tefillin which correspond to Malchut. And so, as it says at the end of the book, Sha'arei Ora, so there we have, Yud and Hey, and then this six, like Yesod, foundation is above, and then we have finally the Hey at the bottom, which is Tefillin. As it says in the book, Gates of Radiance. Okumo shehibo shorsha ba'atzmutein Sof Baruch Hu, as it is in its root, in the essence of the infinite. That's what it says in the Zohar, the section called Zohar Chadash, the new Zohar. When a person wears tefillin, he's expressing the seal of the upper king. The Dukna v'chotem u'inyan svirat ha-malchut. This seal, this visage of the upper king, what does it mean, the visage of the king? God is beyond any visage. But that is Sfirat HaMalchut, it's the revelation of kingship. Through God saying, open up for me, in a positive way, Nimshach, there comes the four letters of the shame of the name Yudke Vavke in the service of the Jewish people, and in radiance and joy. So in other words, there is this moment of despair. The temple is destroyed. And God says, yes, I've washed my hands off the temple. There's a gap, there's nothing there. And then suddenly it changes. And God, so to speak, pours this beneficence, this love, this blessing open for me, he says. So there is a new arousal from above, arousing the Jewish people in all these four different levels of love and of inspiration. V'zeo gam ke ma shekatuv la Yehudim hayta ora. And that's why it says for the Jewish people, there was radiance, these four levels, radiance and joy. As it says in the Talmud, the chol ha-kofer ba'avodah zara nikra Yehudi. Why the Jews in the Megillah called Yehudi? Because really, they were from different tribes. They were from Benjamin, some were from Yehuda, some were from Benjamin, there were other tribes as well. But they're called Yehudim, because anyone who denies idolatry is called Yehudi. First of all, there is the self-sacrifice, the readiness for self-sacrifice of the Jews, which they all stood in this mood of dedication in the time of Purim. And that's the Pitchuli Kochudishon Machat. God says, open up for me like the eye of a needle. And that was their dedication. And then I will reveal myself to you in the most wonderful way. Then you have these four levels of radiance and joy and sason and rejoicing and glory. And that's what it says, Ish Yehudi Haya. There was a Jew, a man, a Jewish man, in Shushan Abirah, in Shushan the capital, and his name was Mordechai. Mordechai min HaTorah minayin. Where do we have the idea of Mordechai from the Torah, the Megillah? The tractate Megillah is discussing in the Talmud what's the source of Mordechai and Esther in the five books of Moses, even though the whole story of Esther is long after the five books of Moses. But there is a concept that everything is in some way revealed, hinted at, in the five books of Moses. Leka midi deloida misa b'oraita. There isn't anything which isn't hinted at in some way in the five books of Moses, in the Torah, in the Chumash. So it says, where do we have Mordechai from the Torah? And it gives this word, mordro, which is translated, meira dachyo, pure myrrh. And pure myrrh in Aramaic is meredachia, which is like Mordechai. So you have from pure myrrh to Mordechai. And it explains in Torah Or, from by Rabbi Shnatelman, that the Jew is the quality of self-sacrifice, of dedication. And the word Yehudi comes from the expression of Hoda'ah. Hoda'ah means an acceptance of God which goes higher than reason. Then this acceptance of God, this dedication to God, higher than reason, Zepa'al b'kulam, this caused for all of them at Inyan HaMesirin Nefesh, the whole idea of self-sacrifice, of dedication, shekulam nikrim yehudim, dafka, that all of them are called Jews. This word yehudim, as what the sages said, shezer heifach matzavam akodem. This is the opposite of the way they were previously. Because previously, sheishtachavu l'andartia, they bowed down to a statue that Achashverosh put up, or Nebuchadnezzar put up the statue, and they bowed down to the statue, as it says in the Talmud. And then afterwards, through their dedication, they did the Volter fast, they turned round. From having bowed to a statue, they now are dedicated to God. The impure becomes pure. A person can be lost in a situation where they're even bowing down to an idolatrous statue, and then they can come back. And they can come back with a sense of dedication to God in all the four letters of the name Yudke Bavke, radiance and joy and rejoicing and glory, till the radiance and joy and rejoicing and glory which comes down right into the world, not as an ethereal concept, but absolutely in the world as the Torah is really saying. And that joy is what it's all about with the coming of Mashiach, said King. So that is our discourse. And now this discourse was, you see, every discourse, or many, have like a little story behind it. And there's a story behind this discourse. There was a rabbi, a very beautiful rabbi, called Rabbi Ben Tzion Shem Tov, who, Alav HaShalom, Zichron Livracha, who I had the schut to meet many times, to know. And he's the person who set up Lubavitch in England. And he had two daughters. One daughter married the rabbi who's the head of Lubavitch in England, Rabbi Sivak, and the other daughter married the rabbi who's the head of Lubavitch in France, Rabbi Asimov. And it was just before the wedding of Rabbi Asimov, who was getting married in New York. And Rabbi Shem Tov, who was a very close chassid of the Rebbe, asked the Rebbe to be Masadeh Kiddushin for his daughter. And he really wanted that the Rebbe should himself be the rabbi standing under the chuppah with his daughter and a young man. His daughter, Basi, is her name, very, very charming lady. And her husband, Rabbi Muli Azibon. And the Rebbe declined to do that. But this was the Shabbat just before the wedding, and the Rebbe said this discourse, and it was felt that this was like a wedding present for the wedding. And immediately after the Shabbat, the Rebbe looked over the discourse and gave it to be printed, and it was printed, I think, for the wedding and given out at the wedding. And it was like the Rebbe's joining it to that wedding. So there it is. The wedding of the Jewish people and God is mirrored in every Jewish wedding. And with the help of God, the fulfillment of the wedding will be with the coming of Mashiach and the building of the temple and the offering of the incense. Yeah.